This is Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by Anderson, Agostino & Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Agostino & Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
Welcome to Irish Illustrated Insider with Pete Sampson and Tim O'Malley. I'm Tim Priester, and we're previewing the Miami-Ohio game this weekend, Notre Dame 3-1, and trying to build on a very strong performance against Michigan State last week. This is one of those moments, and Brian Kelly talked about it on Tuesday, that their mission and their commitment to excellence should not allow for any kind of emotional letdown this week. But I still stand by coming off of three physical opponents.
They are still a team made of human beings.
They are, right? Exactly. They are, exactly. And coming off three physical opponents, and they expended a lot of emotion last week, post-game as much as during the game. So it'll be interesting to see how Notre Dame bounces back in terms of, consistency and everything that they built last week against Michigan State.
I mean, I've sort of been asking a few players this week about, okay, that was the best performance since when? And then some of them have answers, and I think Drew Trinkle was like, it was the best win since Florida State. And he's like, if we had won.
If we-
but, at, Georgia Tech is a possible candidate. That was followed up by UMass. Texas was a really impressive win. That was followed up by Virginia. I sort of go back to, when they smoked Michigan, that was followed up by Purdue, which was okay.
I think of like Temple and Pitt back to back, and then you just don't get up at all for Wake Forest. The Wake Forest game was really a sleeper. But, I think the difference with this team and why they could have, why it could seem, lose the human nature aspect of it is they're physical, they run the football, and if you don't go out there and try and throw 35 times, you can't keep a team in it. You keep teams in it by missing passes.
Right.
They should just, they'll just run the ball and not keep them in it.
Here are the two best examples of the letdown. What did we say this game reminded us most of? Michigan State in 2012. That was followed up by a really weird game against Michigan a week later.
The quarterback had a lot to do with that one.
Or Oklahoma, which was followed up by the Pittsburgh near total disaster.
Yeah.
As forecasted
by Lewis Nix, by the way, that week.
Was it?
Yes, he said it doesn't. He goes, we have to be more for Pittsburgh than we're Oklahoma.
Yeah, I'm not saying that Notre Dame is going to beat Miami, Ohio in triple overtime, but I don't think that this game necessarily is going to carry over from last week.
I agree, but I think this is a different team. We talked about on Monday about Pete about. Well, you were here too, weren't you, Tim? You were back by then. About being a different being. A different coached football team. I'd like to think that this team has turned the page on that and that stuff isn't as relevant. However,
you're saying it's a different team from the 2012 team.
You're right. I can't say that because that would be silly. But in terms of in the last couple of years, I'd like to think that it is. I think this is an opponent as we get into Miami, Ohio, that has a lot of good players, none of which stand out on the offensive line or the defensive line, which should play to Notre Dame's favor with their supposed new level of physicality that we've seen.
I think if you just don't get cute, you can go out there and be up 21-3, and then human nature might kick in. But I would be more to Pete's point if they weren't playing Miami of Ohio.
If this was North Carolina.
If North Carolina in, actually even a home game more than a road game. I think it's harder to focus when you come home. On an average opponent than it is on the road.
Your question, Pete, of Kelly and then of the players, that was at the top of my list this week as well. It's a pertinent question. It's a good opportunity to measure exactly how differently coached this team is and how better prepared they are to not allow human nature to get in the way here.
Yeah, and I think you have to at least account for medically what do you want to get done this weekend? Because I would rather them play a sloppy game that ends with a healthy Dalen Hayes, a healthy Dexter Williams, a fit offensive line, and get more work for Julian Okwara, Tavon Coney, Dante Vaughn, Troy Pride. Like, if you win by 18 points, but Josh Adams and Dexter Williams are healthy, I think that would be better than, wow, they were razor sharp and won 47-3, and Josh Adams is out for the year. Sorry. I think that you use this week more in the big picture for the health of your team than necessarily like, hey, let's sharpen up what we did at Michigan State.
I think we need to look at the injury situation here because it might be something that we weren't quite clear on earlier in the week. Starting with, you mentioned Dalen Hayes. He was supposed to be interviewed yesterday. And, he had a class commitment or he had to study? Or
practice? I mean, it seemed a little weird when I was walking out of there.
That could be injury related. Now, yeah. We look at the offensive backfield, and we know Josh Adams is banged up. We know Tony Jones was banged up because he didn't play last week. And I wasn't quite aware of the Dexter Williams thing in reviewing the game, but I was a little bit blurry-eyed from that whole thing at that point.
He clearly has an ankle.
Yeah, he clearly has an ankle. So you're looking at right now, the healthiest of the running backs is Deion McIntosh, and he's not exactly established, although he's done some really good things in the two opportunities that he's had.
I think Deion McIntosh is a fine running back with this offensive line.
Right.
I would agree with
where
that.
Where you can just like run around.
Man, if you look, you see how much space he had to run against Michigan State. Right. At that point, Michigan State's defensive front was really starting to show some give, and Notre Dame's offensive line was blowing him off the ball. And all McIntosh had to do was run forward, pick the hole that they had clearly created for him, and then dash through it.
There's a very real chance that Jones and Williams won't play this week. Dexter Williams is talking about the minor setback and putting on social media. He's had injuries. We've seen his ankle injuries.
I do want to bring that up. And Pete, your column, your Wednesday column was very good. But the whole thing about Dexter Williams, this is a guy that he has difficulty staying healthy. He has difficulty staying healthy in the spring. He has difficulty staying healthy in August. I'm not sure how he would do with, 12 to 15 carries per game.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. He's been way more banged up than is good for any running back. Josh Adams has had to come out of all four games with an injury as well. He's a much more rugged type back, but that's why I just sort of look at this game. I mean, Dalen Hayes, I did not really notice this as the game was playing out because I was really sick and it was like 11:45 p.m.
That's what I'm saying. We were a little blurry eyed by the end of that.
But Dalen Hayes only played 34 snaps. And
he was
the first guy out when the subs started to come in. Like Jameer Jones was playing defensive end in the nickel package. I mean, Julian Okwara got 41 snaps last week. So they were clearly holding Dalen Hayes back. It wasn't like, hey, let's put the backups in. Because, Tillery was still playing. Trombetti was still playing. Yeah. Morgan, Tranquil, all those guys, except for Dalen Hayes.
I guess I wasn't. I thought Dalen Hayes originally took, a low hit, and that's what kept him on the ground.
I thought it came from when he recovered the fumble.
But when he recovered a fumble, there was a Michigan State player hitting him in the low midsection. And so I thought that's what it was. But how much did he play after that, Pete?
That was mid-second quarter.
Yeah.
He played nine snaps in the second half.
Oh. Okay.
That wasn't a lot.
So that's where they are. And, I don't think this is something that stood out to us as the week started here, the Miami of Ohio week, but it's an issue, especially at running back. You have alternatives at defensive end with Dalen Hayes. You don't have nearly as many at running back.
Yeah, you have all you need at defensive end for this game. If Dalen Hayes does anything wrong, he should get well this week. At running back, you can't make Deion McIntosh run 40 times. He'll die because he doesn't have that type of workload in him. It's been a week since he... Now, he started, I asked Brian Kelly about it, he started getting all of Tony Jones' reps last week because he was clearly going to play, but that's not the same thing as lead running back reps. Because I know Josh Adams will fight through it and he can run 18 times, but you don't want that, as you pointed out, Pete. You don't want Josh Adams to run 18
times. Adams will fight through anything.
Yeah, he'll play. He'll throw me out there. I'll go.
Yeah, nor do you want the substitute for that being like, oh, let's run Wimbush 22 times.
You'd like for Josh Adams to be like, on the mend, on the upswing going into the bye week.
Yeah.
Ideally. So it's not like its total recovery over the 2 weeks, but on the upswing. But I don't know if you have that luxury. Let's talk about Miami of Ohio a little bit. They are a pretty veteran team, 17. They are a very veteran team, 17 starters returning. Chuck Martin has built this team to reach, you know, a kind of a crescendo at the fourth year of his tenure there. A lot of these guys that are returning starters were guys that he played as freshmen, so they're experienced juniors and seniors in some instances. The Ragland to Gardner pass-catch combination is legitimate. Their running backs are pretty good, although they're banged up too. They've had issues there. I like their secondary a lot, and they have a couple good linebackers, and those guys are veterans that have played a lot for Martin. They do have a linebacker that has been out, Junior McMullen. But that's a good group. The strength is the running backs, one receiver, a fairly veteran quarterback, a good secondary, and a couple of healthy, good linebackers. But as I said at the top of the show, you know, I don't think anybody is pointing at anybody on their offensive line or defensive line as standout.
Yeah, that's the problem in this game. That's why I think you look back at the weird losses Notre Dame's had. It's because they're not as physical as they should be. They pass the ball too much, and weird hinky things happen. You get some three and outs, you get tip balls, but Notre Dame, it doesn't matter how many running backs they have. They're going to run them. They should run the ball 50 times.
Yeah, in this game. Martin even said in his teleconference the other day that, you know, my guys will be game. They're too stupid to know otherwise, but they, you know, they could physically get overpowered. Yeah. He readily admits that, and that may be tipping his hand a little bit about their two fronts.
Well, I mean, he said something similar before Mississippi State last year, when they lost by a point.
Well, and it's a true statement.
It's basically, it was like if you divided up these teams and then you had a draft, Mississippi State would be 1-3-85.
One thing about Chuck Martin, he will pretty much spell it out. If that's the way it is, that's the way it is. And sometimes that can be detrimental to a head coach.
I don't know how much time you spent on the Miami Redhawks official football site this week, but they do...
More than other weeks.
He does like a film review where like he'll break down a play and with the coach's tape and like, here's why this worked. Here's why, you know, this is what we were looking for. This is what Ragland was looking for. Or like, here's the defense we're in. It's, you know, he's maybe not got a persona for TV, but it's still pretty interesting if you like sort of film and like, this is why something worked.
I've just been watching the regular TV coverage game stuff, and they're an upper echelon MAC team. Let's not forget that. They're an upper echelon MAC team, so that obviously they can do...
A MAC champion team, I think Brian Kelly says.
Well,
they tied
for the division, but they lost the tiebreaker, so they didn't... They weren't conference... They didn't go to the bowl that goes to the conference champion.
It's kind of like that time Notre Dame basketball tied for the Western Division of the Big East. we hung a banner. Well, I don't know if you should have hung that banner. They're a little different now.
Banner's a little tattered.
I was just a point of warning for people who are waiting for Notre Dame's punt return game to break out this weekend.
That's not the goal.
Kyle Kramer is maybe their best player, and he's their punter. Miami has allowed 2 punt returns all year for 0 yards. So I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of that this weekend.
I think Notre Dame has 4 yards in the 4 games, which I can break down the average here. Let me carry the one.
Yeah.
That is, but there's no room for Fink. They're not going to replace Fink.
That would actually, a 1 yard average would be,
be better,
beating Miami of Ohio in the punt return.
So this is probably not the time to break out. Pete is, and Tim, you both mentioned, they're not looking to win right now in the punt return game. They're not blocking well, and as long as Fink's kamikaze, I refuse to fair catch, doesn't end up in a fumble, I suppose they'll be okay. But look, the guy everybody wants to bring back, if you're on a message board, is CJ Sanders, and he has the yips. If you watch Michigan State and Miami of last year, nothing could have gone worse than him returning punts, and I just don't think they want to go back that way. So
there's no way they're going back.
It's more important to block the gunners at this point, and you're not. I don't know if you're breaking even. You're just not doing anything. It's kind of like 2012, the best year under Brian Kelly. You just catch the punt and get off the field.
Yeah, if you have a good offense and a good defense, like just kind of a do no harm type of situation.
They could do more harm in the kick return game though, because they're blocking for CJ Sanders a little. I mentioned on one of the film reviews, I thought Sanders should have scored on a 37-yard return. You said against Temple he should have scored when he had 1-on-1.
Yeah, I thought the blocking was the best of the year against Michigan State.
And you have a good return man, so it's time to. That's a place they can make some hay.
Would you guys like to make a prediction, and do we want to talk about Nate Leshefsky in this segment, or do we push that off to Jack says yes, we should.
Oh, yeah, you like this? It's...
We could, you know what, we can tie it into the first question that we have in the second segment. So, predictions from you guys.
I think they're going to score plenty. I'm in the 45-20 range. I think they will cover the 23. The running game is what allows it to happen. I don't think you have letdowns emotionally when you're running the ball and running people over. I suppose if they don't cover, it could be backdoor stuff. You mentioned Dante Vaughn, Troy Pride. Once you start rotating everybody in, then it could be hard to stop a guy like Raglan with his skill position talent. But I would think this game is in hand, and if Miami comes back, don't put your money on it, but Notre Dame will have this game in hand early in the third.
Yeah, I mean, the way that they played defense in the fourth quarter with Jameer Jones, Bilal, and Jonathan Jones, I mean, Lewerke could have thrown for 700 yards.
Yes. Yeah.
If that game just went on and on and on. I think Notre Dame's going to score a ton, so I'm going 48-13. Maybe I should go 48-20, but I think Notre Dame is going to be pushing 50 points on Saturday.
Yeah, I think they'll score a lot. I don't know that I'm ready to go to 20 for Miami of Ohio, although they can.
My 20 is late.
Yeah, I got you. And they can spread you out a little bit. We'll probably see more RPOs from them than we will Notre Dame. They do, I think, a couple clever things offensively, but I don't see. Their kicker's been good. Yeah, I don't see more than 16 points, I don't think.
I know coaches don't save things. Like, people always ask, is he saving something for that? I think Chuck might have something after the 155 weeks he's waited to play this game. Yeah. He might have a little wrinkle. This might be the one where we can't use that play. I don't care how good it is. It's coming out against Brian Kelly.
He said, I've never cheered against Notre Dame in my life. Okay, well. And when I saw him in June and put that to him, he wouldn't even admit it. I'm like, Chuck, come on. I don't care how much you love Notre Dame, you want to beat them here.
Oh, he does. Yeah, he admitted that in his call this time.
Yeah, but I would agree. I think he might have something up his sleeve, but I don't. You know,
not that it matters. I'm just saying.
I would like to think that Notre Dame can hold this team under 20, partly because
they've held everyone else.
Yeah,
under 20.
Partly because they're really good. They're getting better all the time, but. Miami of Ohio is banged up at running back, and it's not a great offensive line, so I don't think they're going to be able to run the football with any authority.
No, I think Notre Dame's defense is legitimately really good. Or good, at least. Good plus. And I was sort
good
of
at getting better.
Gooder. Yeah,
I was looking over the stats last weekend during the game, and in the last 30 years, just five times Notre Dame has held its first four opponents to 20 points or less, and it's 1988, 1989,
they were good.
2012, okay. And then 2014 is sort of the fly in the ointment on that one.
So Miami of Ohio scoring 46 like North Carolina did.
Yeah, then it's all falling apart. So, but it's those. I think those teams were finished 44-7 with one national title and played for another. So if this defense is even remotely close to that, Notre Dame may be a lot better than what we think. So it's. And you got to think that they could easily get through the bye week without giving up more than 20 points in the game, because North Carolina is legitimately bad. So
and that is something no one predicted in a summer prediction series.
Not this bad.
So, yeah, I think they're
no that Notre Dame wouldn't give up more than 20 points in the first six games.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
and just, I mean, I think North Carolina may have some offensive weapons a little bit more than we realize, and their young quarterback's really done a pretty good job for them, beating out Brandon Harris for the position. But we'll talk about that more next week.
All right, that's it for segment one. On to questions from Twitter and our readers.
Irish Illustrated Insider is brought to you by Anderson, Augustino, and Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Augustino, and Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
Welcome back to Irish Illustrated Insider. Our first question from A reader is from Mike Bray is the best, and he wants to know about Hoops recruiting, in particular 4-star commitment Nate Leshefsky, who really has Notre Dame near the top of scouts recruiting
rankings. Yeah, number two, and I really think legitimately number two in the scout rating. You know, 4 top 100 guys: Prentice Hubb, Robbie Carmody, Dane Goodwin, and now Nate Leshefsky. And it's, you know, it's interesting because while Notre Dame has this great news about Nate Leshefsky and his verbal commitment to Notre Dame, we have everything that's coming down with the FBI investigation involving Louisville that we know of for sure. And there was a text that came out of Notre Dame about how happy they were with the recruiting class and how they were able to do it above board, contrary to some of the other schools that are under investigation. So I mean, it's significant. You know, and you also have to take into consideration that Juwan Durham is really part of this class, will be the Connecticut transfer, the 6'11 Connecticut transfer, who will be eligible when these four guys come into Notre Dame. So it's, give Mike Bray and his staff a lot of credit. They've parlayed their success in the last 3 years into a great recruiting class.
Durham isn't the best player of the class. He's the most important one because of who else they have, though.
Right.
He is. That's the difference, is having him in a game where you're playing North Carolina, when you're playing in a Sweet 16 or a second round trying to get to the Sweet 16. Notre Dame has guys, plenty of guys, to go do what they did last year. But now they're getting some guys to do what they did a couple years ago again. And that, I really think Mike Bray was ready to ride off into the sunset with that Jaren Grant, Pat Connaughton team. And now he has signed the school up for 5 more years of quality basketball.
I don't know that Durham is, I mean, I don't know that Durham's going to be a 16, 17 point scorer.
No, but he's there now.
But he's there, and he's a presence around the basket defensively, and he's long. All the things that they rarely, and athletic, all the things that they rarely have.
He could be the 7th best player on the team next year, but he's going to be one of the most important
players. No, he's going to be, and he's going to be a lot stronger, and you know, hopefully no more setbacks with his knees, and he's going to be healthy, and he really complements everything now, especially the rest of this incoming class.
Is Mike Bray ever going to retire? I mean,
at this point, not with this recruiting class he's bringing in here.
Set up for the next 4 or 5 years.
Well, he will. If they go to the Final Four, that's probably right off into the sunset.
He's
right?
only a
that's
year older than me. You want to retire?
No.
Or you want to retire?
He was not. That seemed like the end game at one
point.
Yeah,
I get
you. Pat Connaughton and Jaren Grant.
Well, because
Grant
it
and,
was the peak by far.
Yes, and they were a basket away from beating. That was an all-time classic college basketball game. Had Notre Dame won it. Yeah, to go to the Final Four.
Mike Bray is moving into the one shining moment. For all these years, no one knows how long you've worked. Lyric,
right?
I mean, he's going to be the guy that shows up. I think he was sort of irrelevant in the national stage for a long, long time, and now he's like, he's going to be the best coach never to make it to the Final Four until if they make it to the Final Four, which is pretty impressive to even be mentioned that way.
Yeah, no doubt.
So
no doubt, and they're going to. I mean,
credit to this guy.
They have a chance to be very good this year. Now they may be a shooter short. That's kind of the vibe coming out of Notre Dame, but you've got.
Hey, I'd rather be a shooter short and have Colson and
right,
Farrell on my team.
Exactly.
They've often had shooters.
I mean, whether Bonzi Colson wins Player of the Year or ACC Player of the Year, where there's clearly a bias against somebody not on Tobacco Road, I think we've seen that. It doesn't matter. This is a great college basketball player, and the emergence of Matt Farrell last year was nothing short of phenomenal, really, when you consider how good he was able to play throughout the entire season.
No question. All right, from Twitter, got a couple questions about the defensive back play. The first one is from Nick Keller, and he wants to know what our thoughts are on the safety rotation, if we could understand or explain why Jalen Elliott sometimes, why Devin Studstill others. Also, our thoughts on Nick Coleman. And Kung Pao Poyo also wants to know more about what we think about Nick Coleman's season and if there's ultimately going to be sort of the Elliott stud still. Is that going to settle one way or the other?
I think it's the way it is right now because neither one is clearly better than the other. I think Elliott is a little bit bigger and not necessarily more physical, but I think they feel like there's way more upside with Jalen Elliott, and they're trying to get it out of him. And we've seen good things from Devin Studstill, I thought, especially against Boston College.
I think they did a great, they've done a great job of what I would call protecting Studstill's weakness, which is one-on-one coverage, especially, you could easily protect a safety in that with a whole field, but when you're in the red zone, it gets harder.
Yeah.
I think Elliott's a better athlete overall, and you want your better athlete
I think
overall.
They feel he has greater upside.
Yeah.
Don't you, Pete?
I do, based on the way that they play them. I love what Elko has done to protect the Elliott or Studstill, whoever's in at the time. I mean, I just sort of like look through, okay, who's getting thrown at? I think they've been thrown at a combined 10 times through four games, and it's not because teams don't want to throw at them. Notre Dame just doesn't give them that opportunity. I thought it was interesting in Michigan State. In the second half, Jalen Elliott played 30 snaps, and Devin Studstill played 3.
Yeah, I was surprised.
I was surprised at that.
And then he limped off after the last one, which was that screen pass for the touchdown at the end. I think he sort of got stepped on or his ankle got twisted or something.
Well, he was a little banged up last year, too. So I just think, you know, it's kind of. I think that's kind of like the right tackle situation where you have two good candidates, but one is not clearly better than the other, and that's worked out.
Yeah.
I never imagined that Kramer-Hainsey tandem
switching.
Yeah, you didn't think that would work, but it kind of is, and it's, you know, it's the Elko effect of developing depth on at right tackle, which you rarely see.
And I think with the Elliott Studstill combo, I think it's important to remember the Georgia game, because in that game, Jalen Elliott really struggled, and then Studstill came in, the snaps were 42-17 in favor of Studstill. Last week, I guess they thought Elliott was better. I didn't really pick anything out that Studstill did wrong, but the snaps were 56-17 in favor of Elliott.
What do you say about player trajectory at quarterback? It doesn't just straight go up or straight down.
Yeah, or anywhere. Any position.
That's what I think we have.
So maybe that will go back and forth. I thought Elliott did do some good things. Knew where to be against the run, which is not something that he always does. And the same thing applies with Studstill. I think if I was a quarterback and I saw Studstill in the game, I would try to move him around with my eyes because he seems to like really aggressively bite on stuff. But to get back to the question about Nick Coleman, I don't even think about Nick Coleman anymore, which is a huge compliment to Nick Coleman.
Yeah, he's played well. I'm not really personally not ready to go there yet and say, okay, he's fine. You don't have to worry about anymore because, I mean, and you've looked at, we break down the game in different ways to address different topics and different things. And so, I mean, I'm not in a position to talk about how they have or haven't picked on him. I want to see Notre Dame safety play against USC. I mean, I don't think we really know about Notre Dame safeties until they face a top-notch quarterback.
Well, I think that's a situation where I think we know about Notre Dame safeties. They're good. But good isn't necessarily going to cut it against USC. And they could get ripped against USC, but after that I would still look at it and be like, well, you know what, they played well in six of the first seven games.
Yeah, they're playing well. I don't know that I want to say they're very good or whatever.
This is
semantics, whatever. They've played well. They've done a really nice job, and Nick Coleman is at the top of that list.
Next question from Twitter, John Bloss wants to know, Alize Mack, is he what you were expecting this year?
No. I thought Alize Mack would be a playmaker down the seam, downfield. He's an outlet receiver right now. He did look really quick on that fourth quarter. He got a third and eight and took a couple steps, but then he looked like an athlete. But he looked like a much better athlete in the spring to me. I'm not going to say August because he missed all of August when we watched him practice once get hurt on a nice end zone catch when he looked fast still. I don't know if the hamstring's bothering him. I thought he would look much more dynamic in the passing game. And I don't think that's on Brandon Wimbush. I think it's a lot more on Alize Mack. Brandon Wimbush put a touchdown pass in his hands to start the season and he didn't catch it. So I think Alize Mack has to improve. And if he does it, that's fine because Durham Smythe is much improved and Nick Vischer is much improved.
Yeah. He's lacking laser focus.
Lacking grit.
He might, and I think with that comes grit. I agree. I don't think that he's locked in. I thought he would be considering what was taken away from him last year. I just don't think that he's a very focused, locked-in football player, as evidenced by Nick Vischer absolutely, completely sealing the inside path upfield with a safety, a good 7 or 8 yards off of Mack, but he was bound and determined that he was going to kick it outside, and that's just a lack of concentration and mental awareness.
Someone actually tweeted a clip of that at him, and he was like, yeah, probably should have tucked that inside. I think in some ways he's a player that's trying to make up for last year.
Yeah, that's a good
every
point.
Weekend. Because I mean, you look at the last three games. I have him being targeted 10 times and he has 9 catches. Now, none of those 9 catches, I would be wow, that was great.
It's all about that stuff, though.
I thought we saw him as a potential difference maker within the offense. That clearly has not happened. Has he been a functional player? Sure. But I think functional player is not what we want.
That's self-inflicted. That the coaching staff isn't putting pressure on him to be a star. If he's trying to accomplish too much because he missed last year, that's self-inflicted.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. All right, next Twitter question. Michael O'Neill wants to know, when do you think we'll see Ian Book on Saturday, and what do you want to learn about him?
Fourth quarter, and I think they'll just run the offense. They'll have him throw a little bit. I mean, but no, he won't. You'll have Brandon Wimbush out there most of the time, and I'm not even sure it'll be the whole fourth quarter. It might just be the last 7 minutes because I would protect Brandon Wimbush a little bit more, and I'd get Book in there. If you have a 20-point lead in the fourth quarter, I don't think Brandon Wimbush should take a snap. I don't. There's no point.
Well, I would agree. And,
because
and,
then you'd really get to judge a book by its cover.
And I don't. The one thing I don't want to see this week is Brandon Wimbush taking a hit midway through the fourth quarter when they're winning by 3 to 4 touchdowns.
And he can't not
stop doing. Stop doing that.
It's part of his game is to take hits, so he's got to be off the field.
Yeah, he really does. But, you know, I agree. I think Ian Book runs the offense. I think we've seen some functionality of a backup second line.
And I don't think whatever we see from Book is what would matter. If Wimbush were to go down at North Carolina or against Wake Forest or something, I think Book would respond and they'd call a much different game if Book has to help you win rather than just finish the game off. That's just run some plays that Book knows and get out of there.
Yeah.
I think, you know, just seeing him complete a pass or two would be good. I mean, he threw 3 at Boston College, and none of them were really close.
Sure. I guess when you put in backups that are promising, remember, I mean, people's talked about Dane Chris's backup pass against Washington State for 5 years. It didn't matter. It was just a pass. You know, I just think that it's, we'll know about Ian Book when we have to know about Ian Book. That's the unfortunate part for a backup that hasn't had any of your live bullets that matter.
That's probably true. Question from Wash ND. Since the 4-game suspension for Stefferson, since the 4-game suspension for Stefferson should
You're
be
using
over,
air quotes around suspension, right?
Yes. Do you think he will play on Saturday? And if so, how many snaps will he see?
I think yes, he will play, and I think it will be fewer than 10 snaps.
And then I think he'll get more than 10 snaps against North Carolina. And I think he's back in the fold for the USC game.
So how does this impact the rotation at receiver? I'm curious, too. Because we just had Claypool step forward.
Yeah, I think it'd take more away from Fink and Young. I don't think Stefferson's going to have... He's such a different player than Cam Smith. I mean, Smith's blocking is crucial to this offense. But, you know, what's also important is if you could just get a touchdown pass over the top once in a while, too. Yeah. So is it 3 to make 2? Claypool, Stefferson, and Cam Smith by the time you leave North Carolina? Not this week.
That's how I would see it.
That's how I would see it. 3 to make 2.
Yeah, I think. Yeah. I mean, I think
Fink's a third down guy now.
Fink's playing time is about
to
diminish.
Get Cam
most.
Smith off the field on 3rd and 8. You might not want Stefferson out there on 3rd and 8 either, because can you trust him to run the route right? I mean, just go back to Texas last year. That's why they had to kick a field goal and lose the game, is he didn't run the right route. Yeah. Kaiser never trusted him again.
Well, you know, we're going to find out more when we talk to Brian Kelly about tonight, and he's prepared obviously for the question and he knows that it's coming, and I'm not sure how much he's going to reveal about how much Stefferson's going to play, but we'll finally get, you know, really a straight answer on Kevin Stefferson and the kind of impact he can have actually on the field, because we have not had one single comment like that.
I just want him to say he's available to play this weekend. That's it. That's all he needs to say, because he doesn't need to answer how many snaps he's going to play.
He probably won't go beyond saying that he's going to play.
Is he available to play? And I think we've all had sources tell us that he is, in fact, now available to play in Game 5.
We had sources tell us that in August.
And we also, you know, I mean, you asked last week, Pete, on Thursday, and he revealed that he has been working with the quote, varsity, with the big boys. And so, I mean, presumably he can kind of hit the ground running. It's not like he's doing this without any preparation. He's had several weeks of preparation.
Yeah, they're preparing for it. And I agree with what O'Malley's saying. I think it's a 3 for 2 with Cam Smith, Claypool, Stefferson.
Yeah.
And you got EQ on the other side. That's it. I mean, those are your four receivers moving forward. I mean, you mentioned Tim Fink's snaps dropping. Well, that's already happened.
That's happened. Yeah,
he went from 49 to 5.
Yeah. I think you can make Fink
BC to Michigan State.
I think you make Fink a third down guy now, because I don't think he should be blocking for Claypool. I think he's a third and 11. You want Fink in there instead of Smith
and Stefferson. I think it's really important, even with Stefferson. I think it's really important to work hard on continuing to develop Claypool.
He is such a physical
difference maker out there that you cannot take away his time. It's important that he continues to play. And if you're taking snaps away from anybody, it's Cam Smith, unless of course you need that key block.
Yeah, like when I was talking to Claypool yesterday, I asked about, you know, you come out with EQ, you, Alize, Durham, and he's like,
I feel the same way. That's what the running backs think too. They see all those guys in front of them.
Some big dudes. All right, next up, Irish McCarthy, what's your best guess on the running back carry distribution on Saturday?
I don't think we can give a clear answer because we're just not sure of the health of that entire group. So, I mean, all things being equal, if they're all healthy, we could speculate, but we don't know where Adams is.
I really don't think Tony Jones, if you sit out a game on the road, is going to play against Miami of Ohio.
Well, I mean, what do you mean?
It's hard to get healthy. If you were not even close, you weren't even in the warm-ups, though. It wasn't game time. It was a fake game time decision. He was not involved at all. He was never going to play. I think that means you're pretty far from.
We really don't know exactly.
No, where we don't. When you're out of the game, it's hard.
Yeah,
to
no, I got you. Fine. I got you. I just don't think right. I mean, we can't speculate about a distribution because we just don't know. Not to mention, if three of them are banged up, one of them is going to tweak something in the first quarter if they're on the field.
Yeah, I think Tony Jones will be a real game time decision this week,
right.
And they'll probably decide not to play him. I think what I'm most confident is Deion McIntosh will have double digit carries.
Yes.
Other than that, I have a hard time saying like, oh, I think Josh Adams will get 17.
I think Josh Adams will get two.
I would guess Josh Adams. This isn't good. Would just fight through it and have double digit carries too. But I hope he doesn't have to.
He's just hard to keep off. He wants to play, man. We always want to sit guys, and it's funny when you talk to coaches. They're like, they only get 12 chances, man. They want to play. You know, they really want to play. And sometimes you got to hold them out. But I bet you Josh Adams starts the game. And
I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean,
he always answers the bell.
That gives you 9 or 10 carries right there.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, starting Josh Adams, he came back in the game after the ankle X-ray, so I think he's. He played in the fourth quarter. Yeah,
he just wasn't quite himself. You could see he was kind of laboring.
But
for his...
we know how injured he was last year with a hamstring.
Yeah,
he still played.
Yeah. I think the question is Dexter. The other three, I think we have kind of a pretty good. Mm-hmm. Like Tony Jones, probably no. Josh Adams, almost definitely yes. Deion McIntosh, obviously yes. And then Dexter Williams, maybe.
Hopefully, so. If Dexter Williams can play, that helps Josh Adams not have to. Carry more than 10 times. That's really... You can't give Deion McIntosh 25 carries. He's not going to be fumbling. It's not the way it works.
Just collapse.
No. Irish Boo. With Dalen Hayes, Andrew Trumbetti, and Khalid Kareem playing well at defensive end, should Jay Hayes get more snaps at three technique for Jonathan Bonner?
I guess not, because we've asked a lot about it, and they say it's not where they want to play him, right? And Jay Hayes is a good defensive end. He's playing. He plays that position really well.
At this point, I flat out say no.
Yeah, he's valuable. Notre Dame's defensive ends have been outstanding this year.
Jay Hayes is an anchor at defensive end. He is a strong side defensive end. You need that anchor. I wouldn't mess with that because MTA has emerged.
Sure.
as a guy who can legitimately, if not unseat Bonner, certainly take snaps away from him.
I wouldn't move him at all.
No.
You know, and this would fall under the one of our preseason speculations that in hindsight are like, we don't need to move Jay Hayes inside because that was something we talked about in the summer. Mm-hmm. Their defensive tackle play is way better than what I was expecting.
How many snaps did Bonner have against Michigan State and Boston College?
32 and 33.
That's fine. You're fine. You know?
How about MTA?
22 at BC, 43 against Michigan State.
Great.
Yep. They're in business. That's fine.
Yeah, they're fine.
They don't play on third down and long. I mean, I guess MTA, he kind of does actually, MTA, but there's...
No, I mean, it's always it's Trumbetti
in the backup role. Oh, yeah.
It's Trumbetti and Tillery. Tillery plays the most by far. So it's like, I think Jay Hayes is fine where he is. He can shove people around sometimes. I thought he was great against Georgia.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just ragdolling some people.
Tagovailoa is getting better every game. I've said it before. I love that type of body at three technique because it's such a combination of a guy that's got the length and the quickness to crease gaps, but also has the stature to be stout, you know, and hold the point of attack. I love that type of body for a three technique.
We were talking about this yesterday, I think, before interviews, and I started like, okay, what's the biggest surprise of this team? And I think it's Julian Okwara, but Tagovailoa Amosa is, I mean, he's effective as a true freshman who picked Notre Dame over Vanderbilt and Navy. Like, that doesn't really make much sense.
Who we didn't even know about until a couple weeks before the end of the recruiting season. Although, I'm pretty sure I had him in my top five because I thought his high school film was phenomenal.
So you're saying that if he's at Navy in 2 years, he'd be sacking Wimbush and causing fumbles in a very close game.
By the way, we're still in transition with the pronunciation because Notre Dame changed it last week.
They changed it on us. That's not cool.
I do want to ask BK about him.
There's tongue involved
today.
Right? Yes. Tagovailoa.
I want to ask BK about him so BK says his name.
Oh yeah, that'll clear it up.
A source told me he's been practicing it. such an occasion.
There has now for everybody. There's now an N inserted into the first syllable of his name, even though there is no N actually in his first name.
Correct.
Or last name.
Hey, the good news is, if he was no good, nobody would be talking.
Yes,
about
Yes, that's true. You mean like Adeokun Deje?
That's next year. He's a next year's player.
Yeah, he's coming. He is coming. He didn't deserve that late hit. He was pulled into Lewerke's legs.
That was a little confusing to me, too. All right, well, I think that's it for today's podcast. We're going to end on a questionable late hit from the Michigan State game that didn't involve Brandon Weaver or Chris Fry. We'll be back Monday to recap the Miami game. And, of course, we'll have instant analysis over the weekend from the stadium columns. All sorts of good stuff on IrishIllustrated.com. So until we talk to you again Monday, you can check out all our stuff on the website. Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, Pete Sampson. Thanks for listening.